Okay, good morning, listeners. You're listening to Green Left, and on the line we have our first interview for the program today. We have one of the leading candidates for the Sue Bolton-Moreland team, Sue Bolton, who is a two-term socialist councillor in Moreland, representing the North East Ward. And the council elections are going to be coming up on October the 22nd. They're coming up on October the 22nd for a postal ballot, where people will receive a postal ballot on the 6th of October and have till October the 22nd to send in their votes. And so we have Sue Bolton on the line to talk about her campaign. And so, yeah, good morning, Sue.
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah, I guess first kind of question that I want to sort of ask is, just for listeners' information, I guess, can you give us a bit of a background on these council elections? Like, what are some of the general issues that are going to be coming up this kind of council election? And then maybe we'll talk a bit about what you're standing for and what is kind of the platform you're kind of running on.
Well, I think there is a big democratic rights issue that's going to, and a privatisation issue that's likely to be coming up one of the decisions before the council elections happens this year, and other decisions likely to come up during the term of this coming council. One issue that is coming up is a belief of the current council that if you provide developers with incentives, they will provide good development. And the incentive that the council is offering up is people's right to be notified and be able to object to development. And the two things they've got, one is what they call a design excellence scorecard, removes the right of councillors to be able to vote on a development and puts the decision totally in the hands of the council officers. And the first time this was implemented in Moreland, it's only meant to be a trial, and the council is due to vote on this before the council elections. The residents are hopping mad because the issue of design excellence is quite subjective. It's not an objective thing, and often the people who live in an area are the ones who are expert in knowing how the area works, in the same way that workers on the job are the experts in how the job is functioning. And so this removes a democratic right. But also the council is planning to remove residents' right to be notified or to be able to object to, two dwellings on a lot in the name of good design again. And really this is, probably the council and some people would say this is all just NIMBY stuff, not in my backyard, blah, blah, blah. But it is an important democratic right in a community that the community has the right to have a say. And this is happening at the same time that the Scott Morrison government is working out a way of cutting, so-called cutting red tape and cutting green tape. And you need to be wary about cutting red tape and cutting green tape, because usually what that means is removal of the community's right to have a say over a project, whether it's be on environmental grounds or all sorts of grounds. So I think we have to be opposed to any removal of residents' rights. The other service that the council provides, which is on the chopping block for this next council term, not just in Moreland, in other councils as well, and hasn't really been reported very much, is councils in Victoria, most of them run a home care service. And as part of the deal in 2012 between federal and state governments and the Local Government Association in Australia, they agreed that in return for state governments funding NDIS, that the federal government would take over the home care services and fully outsource it and privatise it along the lines of NDIS, so that it would be, like NDIS, a voucher-run service where there's no actually funded service by any kind of government body. This is a massive problem, and I think we've seen problems in the NDIS with this model, and COVID-19 shows us that this casualised model is problematic because there is now starting to be COVID in these privatised sectors. So at the moment, with the council-run service, you have a stable workforce with a reasonable income and union conditions. If this is allowed to be, if councils are able to get away with dumping this service and it to become a fully outsourced voucher model, then it means that people who receive home care will get a different carer every time because it'll be a totally casualised workforce and the workers will lose up to half their income and they won't have stable, they won't have a permanent set of clients where they can build up a rapport with people. It'll be different. They'll be caring for a different person each time. And because that is the record of the NDIS, being a totally casualised workforce and a cut in pay for people who moved from government services to NDIS services. So that is something which our team, which is a mixture of social alliance and community independence, is totally opposed to privatisation, and we want to try and save this council service, the home care service, and we support democratic rights of residents. Those aren't the only issues, but those are a couple of them. Let me know if you'd like me to talk about some of the other issues.
Yeah, well, I might get into that soon, but I guess, I mean, the other kind of question I want to kind of ask relates to another kind of context for this kind of upcoming council election. And this is sort of not, hasn't really been widely reported in the media, but, you know, the Victorian state government under Labor has implemented a sort of reform to the Local Government Act that essentially means that a lot of councils will be single member wards, which basically mean, just for listeners' information, most councils in Victoria are generally multi-member wards, which means you elect 3 to 4 people within one sort of electorate sort of area, and generally councils are split up into sort of 3 electorate areas. The single member ward will basically mean that local councils will be split into 8 electorate areas where only one gets elected in each of those 8 electorate areas. And of course, that has the impact of reducing, potentially reducing progressive and left-wing voices on the local council, and hegemonizes the Labor Party, who are essentially kind of wanting to sort of retake the local councils from the Greens. So I guess, I mean, want to hear kind of your comments for that particular context for this coming council election.
Well, what this proposal to shift all councils to single member wards for the next election, next council election, it would be like scrapping the Senate and just having House of Representatives. And as we can see, it's has been a lot easier for alternative parties to get a leg in or a foot in the Senate. Whereas it's very, very difficult for independents or alternative candidates or alternative parties, be they right or left, to get elected in a House of Representatives seat. The Greens have really only managed to gain one House of Representatives seat. And it's because that it's not based on proportional representation, so that in the House of Representatives you could win 20% of the votes, but not win a seat across the whole country. And it's also the reason why you can have, say, the Liberal Party government in a range of federal elections getting a minority of votes but becoming the government. So it's it doesn't reflect the proportion of support within the community, whereas the proportional representation system is a much better reflection of people's political viewpoints. And so that's why it is much more advantageous to the major parties, not just Labor, Liberal Party as well, because there's certain parts of Melbourne where the councils are Liberal Party dominated. So it will advantage both Liberal and Labor having single member wards. And the reason for the Labor Party wanting this, I mean, of course they would never admit this, but is that they want to retake the inner city councils back from the Greens, because I think the Greens did establish or have established quite a big base of support on the inner city councils of Moreland, Yarra and Darebin. And you know, they've got some representation on a whole bunch of other councils as well, but it's probably they're most influential on the three inner city councils. And I think the government has realised that that helped them get Adam Band elected to the lower house. So the Labor Party is trying to take back the inner city from the Greens.
Yeah, and I guess the next kind of thing I want to talk to you, because before we go on to talking about, I guess, your election platform, I guess I want to hear a bit of reflection, because you are a twice elected councillor, and you have been elected as an open socialist, as a member of Socialist Alliance for the local council. I want to hear, I guess, a bit about your kind of reflection of experiences on your intervention on local council in terms of how you have attempted to push a sort of socialist left-wing kind of agenda, and also kind of responding, I guess, to the more kind of conservative notions of council, which argues that council should only deal with the three R's, which is rates, rubbish, and I forgot actually what the third one.
Roads, yes. Rates and rubbish.
Yeah, roads, rates and rubbish. So I kind of want to hear your kind of comments, I guess, on that.
Well, I think, first of all, council is a massive bureaucracy, and councils are very neoliberal, like other sections of government. And probably most of the top bosses or top bureaucrats in council wouldn't be there if they weren't committed to, or at least acquiesced to, a neoliberal agenda. And what you also notice is that each level of government has agreements with other levels of government, where money for this or that project is dependent on either, you know, partnerships with private enterprise, or even if it might not be a direct relationship with private enterprise, partnerships with non-government organisations like welfare groups, etc. But basically, councils don't deliver all of the services. And some councils, I believe Mornington Council, actually delivers very few projects itself. It's almost like a manager of contracts. Almost everything is contracted out and they just manage the contracts. The impact of, you know, 30 or 40 years of neoliberalism has shown its mark on local councils. And as a socialist entering that space, or even and someone else who's progressive, it is very hard to operate in that environment. So it means that when you're sort of putting things forward or arguing for things or against things, you really need community campaigns. You're not going to be able to shift the bureaucracy or the other councillors unless there are community campaigns that start to break that apart. And it's also really important, I think, for left-wing councillor, socialist councillor, to not just listen to information that comes through council bodies, council bureaucrats, but also look for outside sources of information, so that you're not just towing the line that comes out of council, because sometimes the information that comes from council is, you know, angled in a certain direction to get certain decisions made, to persuade councillors that that's the only way you can do something, such as privatisation of home care or whatever it is. So councillors, like a socialist councillor or an activist councillor, you need to help the community with community campaigns and provide information to people with a view to people campaigning for their rights. Because often councils or governments are making decisions that no one in the community knows anything about. They're not aware that their rights are being stripped away until they go to use those rights and suddenly they discover they're gone. So that's why I've been involved in a lot of community campaigns, and that has meant I have won some things on council. And there is an argument put up by the right wing to say councils shouldn't be involved in other issues. They should just be involved in roads, rates and rubbish. Those are the things that council controls. But actually, the council doesn't actually fully control roads, rates and rubbish. The council is influenced by federal and state policies. Some roads are owned by the state government, some are owned by the federal government. So the council doesn't, so there's certain things that the council has no control over, such as say Sydney Road, the main road going through Moreland. That's a state government road. The council can't change a thing on that road without the state government agreeing to it. It can lobby state government, but it can't actually just go and do the work. So it's a total furphy, because also you notice with the right wing that the right wing are totally happy to move motions on things that don't relate to roads, rates and rubbish when it suits them, you know, whether it be around Anzac Day or supporting the police. So at a recent council meeting, I moved a motion supporting anti-racism, supporting Black Lives Matter movement and calling for anti-racism banner to be restored to Moreland, to Coburg Town Hall. And one of the other Conservative councils countered with a motion in support of the police, saying what a wonderful job the police do and blah, blah, blah. I mean, this is a councillor who talks about council just making decisions about roads, rates and rubbish. So when it suits them, the right wing roll out that argument. But when it doesn't suit them and they, you know, they don't have much of an argument, they raise that question that council shouldn't get involved with climate change or supporting refugees or whatever. But the reality is there are a lot of refugees living in the Moreland community, and we've got an obligation to support refugees who are living in our community. And we also know that sometimes local councils can be a force for change. So if you can start to win over local councils on some issues, it can start to put a lot of pressure on state and federal government, which is why state and federal governments want councils not to take up other issues. And in Moreland, the fact that Moreland and Yarra councils took positions and funded legal challenges against the East-West Link actually helped back the community action campaigns on the ground, like tunnel picket and all the protesting on the ground. The two things together helped defeat the East-West Link. And so the federal and state governments know that that when councils support a community campaign, it can put a lot of pressure on state government to change its course of action, or federal government. And because they know that local councils, it is easier for the community to influence and win things at the local council level than state and federal government.
Next thing I kind of want to ask you about is, what can you tell us, I guess, about the election platform that you and the Sue Bolton Moreland team is kind of running on for this coming council elections?
Well, our slogan is community need, not developer greed. And I guess that's a variation on a slogan which Social Science has run on in the past, which is people before profit. And I think it sort of indicates that at the local council level, often the section of big business that people come up against the most is big developers, greedy developers. Greedy developers that try and take the council for a ride and like to ride roughshod over the community. And the other side of it being that the council should be focused on community need rather than giving the developers a free ride. So that's why we've got that particular slogan. It's in a sense, it's a variation of people before profit. And so our platform includes a whole range of things, including, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, opposition to privatisation of any council services. And we want to see some council services which have been privatised many years ago come back into council hands, such as the swimming pools and the waste service south of Bell Street, which is operated by a private company. We'd like to see those things come back into council hands. We're certainly opposed to the sell-off of public land along the waterways, and frequently the state government is trying to sell off public land along the waterways, and we want to keep council opposing the sell-off of that land and buying it back for the community so it can be community land in perpetuity if we can't stop the state government selling it off. We want to keep taking measures to combat extreme heat, both in terms of planting street trees, but also having some form of heat relief centres where people can go to cool off when there is extreme heat and they can't get cool, people can't get cool in their own homes. We want to see an improvement in public transport, especially the Upfield line, where if you live north of Bell Street and especially live north of the where the tram line ends, every time a train is cancelled, a train is running late by 6 minutes, then that service gets cancelled and turned around at Coburg Station, meaning that everyone north of Bell Street loses out on trains. And that can mean that people can wait up to an hour at peak hour for a train, which has led to loss of jobs and missed medical appointments, missed exams, et cetera, for people, also missed job interviews, et cetera. So, you know, we want to see an improvement in public transport. And there are also many other things as well. Those are some of them. We're certainly committed in terms of anti-racism, and certainly that's really a big key factor with us. We certainly want to try and force the council to both stand up against racism, but also do more than it currently does in terms of supporting migrant communities and the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, you know, whether it's through employment or other forms of recognition. And we also, we're certainly committed to not supporting rates rises above inflation, because workers' wages are not rising above inflation. You know, we don't want to see council fees for swimming pools, et cetera, increasing above inflation, because we want community facilities to be available for the community, and it shouldn't be only available for people who are rich enough to pay.
Well, thank you very much for that, I guess, Sue. And I guess the kind of next kind of question I kind of want to ask, do you have, I guess, any kind of final comments you'd like to make? How could people get involved if they support what you stand for and so on?
Well, I think if people are interested in getting involved, we've got a website and a Facebook page, and it's called Sue Bolton Moreland Team. And the reason it's focused around me isn't just because I've got a big ego, but just because it is a team of both Socialist Alliance and Community Independence, and I'm the common link between the Community Independence and Socialist Alliance. The Community Independence standing on the ticket very much support all of the policies that we've got, that we're running on in the election. The policies are totally consistent with what socialists should be running on in a council election. And so we'd like to invite people who would like to support us. We're running candidates in every ward in Moreland. We're running myself and Megan Street in North East Ward, which covers from the northern tip of Brunswick all the way up through Coburg to Faulkner. We're standing Pauline Galvin and Jacob, who's interviewing me at the moment, in the South Ward, which is Brunswick. And we're standing Monica Hart, who has been a long-time activist, public transport activist, nowadays is a union delegate and works as a housing crisis worker. She is standing in the Northwest Ward, which covers Glenroy, Pascavale area. So it would be great to have you involved, because we do need a stronger socialist presence in the community, in all sorts of campaigns and in the electoral sphere as well, whether that be state elections or local council elections. And it is easier to get a socialist elected at a local council level. And I think that is important, because then I think it can break people's fear or the misconceptions they've got about socialists, that socialists do have an answer to a whole lot of issues that are happening in society. We don't need to rely on a market-driven system. And in fact, the market-driven system of focusing all decisions around private profit is what's brought us the aged care disaster, the quarantine hotel disaster, the Ruby Princess disaster, and all of these disasters around the handling of the coronavirus. So all over the world, not just in Australia. And we need a system that's based on community need, not private profit.